Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, December 31st, 2018. Thousands protest in the streets of Khartoum today. And a top official with the SPLA-IO says opposition forces are not being integrated into the army.
One of the things I have told you already is about the integration of the forces. That failed completely. We failed to have our forces, as we speak now, to be integrated from the site of Yuai, which is the area of Lo Nuer. We have our forces in Kodok. These forces, as we speak, they are not even now identified and they are not even being integrated.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese police today used tear gas to disperse thousands of protesters shortly after they began marching toward the presidential palace in Khartoum. They're demanding that President Omar al-Bashir step down, as evidenced by several postings on social media. Some activists say police used live ammunition. Video clips show one man with a bloodied bandage around his head wearing a blood-soaked shirt. Others show pools of blood outside a small eatery in the city center. Video clips show scores of demonstrators running away as gunfire and screaming can be heard in the clip. In one video posted online, a female protester's voice can be heard urging others, "Don't run," as those around her are coughing violently from the tear gas. Activists say scores of protesters have been detained and at least four suffered gunshot wounds, according to an online report posted a few hours ago on the Washington Post website. The demonstrations are the latest in a series of protests over nearly 2 weeks now. Thousands have been demonstrated in the capital and other cities across the country against high prices and Bashir's near 30 years of power. The former military spokesman for the SPLA-IO, Tamandang faction, has fled from Juba this week to the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Colonel Dixon Gatluak claims that South Sudan's first vice president, Tamandang, failed to integrate his SPLA-IO forces into the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. Gatluak says SPLA-IO forces loyal to Dang are stranded in the former Upper Nile and Unity States areas, adding that the first vice president is not following procedures for the integration of the opposition forces into the National Army.
Yes, I was the spokesperson for the SPLA-IO under Taban, which is now already integrated into the SSPDF. But the procedural for the integration were not followed as it was stipulated.
What were the procedures? Could you educate our listeners about the procedures for integration?
When we talk of Chapter 2, which is the separation, the assemblings and cantonment of forces, we're supposed to have our cantonment areas that's supposed to be identified by the government in eastern, central and western part of Equatoria and other part of South Sudan. But government failed to identify all
these. But when we last spoke to you, you said the IO forces under Taban Dengai are in cantonment areas in eastern Equatoria and western Equatoria, and you said specifically in Maridi. Why are you changing the story now?
I'm not changing at all. This is whereby we mark the areas. But after all, we did not go in the right way. Things actually fall apart because Bill Farm decided to bring all the forces to Gorom, which is the eastern part of Juba. And this actually were not done with our consent, without actually our knowledge, without being asked consulted by the leadership. And this is what made us to be annoyed, and we have realized that, okay, things are not going to be the way they are.
And how many of you are annoyed? You're saying you're using the word us. How many of you are annoyed?
We are very many.
What is very many, Galwak? Let's be specific. What is very many?
When I talk of cantonment of forces, I'm the officer and the one who is in charge of information. There are others, people also within the rank and file of former SPLA-IO, but I could not actually give you their name and how many are there at the moment, but the people are there.
Yeah, I read your statement carefully, and you were not mincing your words. You said General Taban Dengai, the first vice president, has failed, And you also accused the Minister of Petroleum, Ezekiel Lul, of only employing people from his village. Those are very serious allegations. Could you give us more details on that?
Definitely. The reason why I'm saying General Taban has failed because the system and the way things should be done was corrupted on the way when we were in Juba.
How?
One of the things I have told you already is about the integration of the forces. That failed completely. We failed to have our forces, as we speak now, to be integrated from the site of UI, which is the area of Low Nuer. We have our forces in Kodok. These forces, as we speak, they are not even now identified and they are not even being integrated. And the way it is being done also, it was not the right way it's supposed to be done. When I talk of the issue of Honorable Ezekiel, yes, based on my own assessment, if you look at the system in the oil sector, things are not done the way they are. It is a matter of having somebody who is also holding a very big position in the government and then bring you. It does not mean that whatever the qualification that you have, the educational background.
So you're telling me that the employment in the oil industry, the merits is based on tribe, not qualification.
Definitely, this is what I'm trying to say, and this is what I'm trying to tell the public and also the South Sudanese in particular, that there is a need for the oil sector to be reviewed, and there is a need for the system also to be revisited, because the system that we have now, it is only the one tribe, which is one-sided, that is actually controlling the oil sector from the top up to the bottom. When you look at the Nile Pats, when we look at other head, which is, we call them the section heads, from the national level and then to the state level. Most of this department, they are being controlled by one of the tribes.
But how would you react to people who would say, Dickson Galwak, if you were a big officer at Nilepet or other petroleum sectors, you would be saying something different today? It's just because you're out, that's why you are now pointing fingers at those who are inside. How would you react to that if somebody puts that right on your face?
Tanza, I'm fighting for the right of each and every person, especially the citizens.
But you've been shifting your alliances. If you're fighting for the rights of the people, you should be in one camp. You have jumped many camps. Why should people trust you?
If things are not working well, there is no need for me to be in a camp which is already failed. If I talk of Machar is weak. And I have to be frank to you, Machar is weak, and that was the reason why we decided to take over the leadership from him, because he was not in a position actually to control the system. The same thing also when I tried Taban and I left for Juba. So I was actually trying to see if there should be significant change that's supposed to be made by General Taban, but this thing did not work.
That's Colonel Dickson Gatluak, the former military spokesman for the SPLA-IO, Taban Deng faction. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Nairobi earlier today. Tomorrow, Gatluak talks with Tanza about the future of the September 12th peace deal. South Sudan has formed a special military court to try South Sudan soldiers suspected of committing rapes, robberies, and other serious crimes. The martial court, which is comprised of 5 judges from the police, national security, and the national army, will also retry suspects accused of killing a Catholic priest. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
Do hereby.
Is swear by Almighty God.
Swear by Almighty God.
Five military judges with ranks of generals and colonels take their oaths of office today at the Giada military barrack, where 6 suspects from the South Sudan Army and 1 civilian made their first appearance before the court for armed robberies and car theft. The martial court was formed after President Salva Kiir issued orders 22 and 23 on Saturday for establishing a general court martial to try suspects, both soldiers and civilians. The court, headed by Major General Marshal Stephen Babanay, is also trying government soldiers suspected of repeatedly raping women and girls at gunpoint. The first hearing is scheduled for January 11th in order to give the accused time to obtain lawyers. SSPDF spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kwong says the court will also try suspects accused of killing a Catholic priest in Chebek 2 months ago.
One trying suspects suspected of involvement in the murder of a Father Victor Luka Odhiambo, the principal of Mazirlari Teachers Training Institute in Chuaibit of Gog State. The second function was the suspects suspected of involvement in armed robberies and car thefts in Juba. And some of the suspects who appear today are as follows, or the accused: Lieutenant Colonel Sunday Akech Thiep, Sergeant Bol Agany Akech, Sergeant Deng Du Akot, Private Arol Mayan Deng, then Sergeant Benjamin Agany Akol, Sergeant Major Shen Deng Anei, and a civilian Akwen Deng Akwei Deng Akwei.
Kwong says with the establishment of the joint martial court, no soldier who commits a serious crime will escape justice.
The Republican order states it very clearly that whoever commits a crime against a civilian using arms or is being committed at gunpoint, whether it's a civilian or it's from the organized forces, is going to be tried under military laws. And this is what we have done now. We have anybody who is in prison because of ABCD is going to be tried by this general court martial.
Kwong says the South Sudan military hopes to repair its image by holding soldiers across the country accountable for their actions when they break the law.
We have prosecuted cases successfully. Some of our servicemen are languishing in jails because we got hold of them and made them accountable for crimes they had committed. Those who were convicted for having murdered a local journalist, those who raped expatriates at Tarin, some of them are serving very lengthy jail terms for the crimes they had committed. So we have a very credible, very competent military justice that now has won the trust of the people of South Sudan and the international community.
Godfrey Victor, executive director of the local advocate group Justice and Human Rights Observatory, criticized the court for trying civilians in a military court. Bola says Section 4 of the SPLA Act 2009 mandates that a martial court try only SPLA members, not civilians.
A court has to talk in terms of law, in terms of legality. So you cannot bring something from nowhere when you don't have it in the court. If now civilians are to be tried under the court martials, that provisions that provides for only members of the SPLA has to be amended to include even civilians be tried there. And here the court will have a legal justifications on how to try those people.
Bola says his group is not opposed to a military court, but says senior SSPDF members should also be court-martialed.
Something has to be done about what is happening. The rampant killing, the rampant looting by the army personnel. It is a good idea, but the formalities of the law and the procedures of the law has to be properly followed in order to avoid creating a loophole and blames. If somebody is a civilian and is tried under court-martial, he appears to say, no, I am not supposed to be tried by this court because the court has provided a jurisdiction that I, being a civilian, if I commit a crime, take me to the civil court.
Bola says South Sudan must respect the constitution so that sustainable justice can be achieved in the country. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. There have been more deadly road attacks in South Sudan. Find out where when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when you are upset, would you rather be alone or with others?
I'd rather be alone, because sometimes being with people demands a lot from someone's self.
When you stress up, there's no need of being alone, because when you are with others, at least they can advise you.
When I'm upset, actually, being alone is not a good thing. So at least I have to associate with my colleague, and I end up releasing that anger from me.
I prefer being alone when I'm upset. Yeah, because at least when I'm alone, I regain some humor that I, when at least I go in public, I can talk with someone now. But when I'm still pissed, I can't talk to anyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Human rights activists and civilians in Yei River State accuse rebel armed forces of launching a fresh wave of attacks in Yei River State, despite the signing of the September peace deal. Last week, dozens of civilians were abducted, while at least one person was killed in a series of road ambushes along the Yei Kaya Road, which connects South Sudan to neighboring Uganda. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Arua, Uganda.
Some Yei River State residents say even though the warring parties signed a peace agreement on September 12th, roads in and out of Yei town are still not safe. The Yei Kaya Road is the only major supply route for goods traveling from Uganda to South Sudan, but suspected rebel fighters have ambushed several vehicles and abducted a known number of people last week. Emmanuel Taban Seme is the commissioner for Mugo County, some 14 miles south of Yei town, where civilians have been attacked on Yei Kaya Road. Taban says the security situation remains tense in the area after last week's attack.
In the incident, 11 passengers abducted, but some of them were later released, and the rest are still. And then also followed by another incident in Yari. The first vehicle fell on ambush, and all the passengers were abducted. There are 7 in number. And then the second vehicle also fell on ambush, and it resulted in the wounded of all the 4 passengers. The Secretary General of the state was traveling also to Uganda. And then in Ligi, he also fell on ambush, where one of the passengers in the vehicle was shot dead. Currently, we know NAS and South Sudan Movement for Change. These are the 2 groups who are disturbing us in the area.
Sevid, a resident of Yei town who prefers not to reveal his last name for fear of government reprisal, describes how his brother was killed recently on the Yei Kaya Road.
He was heading to Uganda to see the family in Arua. They fall into the ambush. Immediately they called me that your brother, they fall into the ambush and then he's dead. After last family member, we are really shocked.
Villages along the Yei Kaya Road are controlled by the rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, National Salvation Front, and South Sudan National Movement for Change, while the administrative towns are under the control of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for the SPLA-IO. Lam denies his forces have ambushed civilian passenger vehicles along the Yei Kaya Road.
To be sincere, we are absolutely not responsible for what happened to these people. There's no way we can abduct our own civilians that are supposed to be protected by us. I believe these people have been taken by the forces of Thomas Cirillo in collaboration with the forces of NMC. So they are the one responsible for these people. But we can't get hold of them right now, because if we have to go to these people, that would mean we have to go and attack them.
Soba Samuel Manas, a rebel spokesman for the National Salvation Front, accused the SPLA-IO and its counterpart, the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, of carrying out the deadly attacks.
These forces, the government forces, as well as the IO forces, and they are the ones controlling this road. National Salvation Front does not have a base in Yei and Moromu. And how come if we are not existing in this place? Why then?
Soba claims the NAS forces are committed to respecting the ceasefire agreement. South Sudan People's Defense Forces spokesman General Lu Rai Kwang claims NAS forces intensified attacks on government positions around the Yei River State. He calls NAS a threat to the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement.
Well, that accusation and counter-accusation will not be stopped. The only credible body that will come up with a report is CITICAM. And therefore, let me renew my call to CITICAM to get down on the ground, do investigation, and hold those in violation to account. Let the international community know that the only threat to the peace agreement, the implementation of the peace agreement, and to the lives and property of people of South Sudan is also NAS. They also need to come out and condemn it. It is our responsibility as the National Army. We are going to beat up security to protect property and the lives of the people of South Sudan.
Kemis Benson, a human rights defender in Yei River State, is calling on armed groups to release the abductees and ensure the free movement of civilians across the state.
Our call is that these people should be released without any condition. Let them show commitment of their responsibility and ensuring that citizens are protected from this inhuman action, abduction. If it continues like this, business will really come down and this road might likely be closed.
Stanley Lonatan is a bishop of the New Generation Tabernacles in Yeh River State. Stanley condemned both sides for violating the peace deal.
We also believe that it is the responsibility of the parties signatory to the peace agreement to protect the civilians where they are. And what is happening these days is very alarming, it is very shocking, it is very, very bad. So we strongly condemn these atrocities against civilians, and we appeal to CITESAM, we appeal to UNIMIS to take their responsibility seriously, to go and monitor wherever these problems are happening, and then to give report.
According to the September 2018 security arrangements and the 2017 cessation of hostilities agreements, all parties must avoid all acts of hostility, intimidation, violence, or attacks against the civil population. The deal also states that all parties are to ensure protection of civilians at all times and ensure safety, dignity of individuals and communities, and guarantee free movement of civilians, commodities, and services. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Arua, Uganda.
Kibbutwe state authorities say they will ban the importation of maize flour from Uganda in 2019. Officials say local farmers should be able to produce enough food for state residents. Elias Ganana Mangbando has more for VOA from Yambo.
When announcing the ban on 25th of this month, Kibbutwe State Governor Badagbo Daniel Limbasa said farmers in the state have capacity to produce enough food.
The year 2019 is the year somewhere I'm going to ban posho, they call it maize, coming from Uganda to this state. Meaning that by 27, all of you, to our usual team, agriculture farming, everybody on 27 must go and start cutting the bush, so that by January and February we'll be make it ready. And already money is here for buying those produce from you. I want to see now who will become poor, who will not send a child to school because we don't have money, when God has given us land very fertile which does not need fertilizer.
Governor Badagu says 2019 will be a year for what he calls socio-economic transformation for the people of Kibbutwe State, asking residents to forgive each other and reconcile. Arun Isaac Abubakar, a Sudanese businessman in Yambio, says he welcomes the orders from the state government. Speaking in Arabic, Abubakar says the state has the potential to feed its own population.
Indeed, we have been importing the flour from Uganda. If the government says, let people go to farming, that is a good idea, so that everybody will go and cultivate and bring produce to the people for sure.
Abubakar says, with peace in South Sudan, traders like him will be able to operate their businesses normally and the prices of goods will drop. Sylvia Alfred sells flour in Yambio's open market and welcomes the ban on importing maize from neighboring Uganda. Speaking in local Arabic, Alfred says farmers in the state can produce goods for local consumption.
I am working in the market here. I am selling flour, and that flour, we are the ones who produced it with our hands. What the governor has said, it is good for our part, because if we work with our hands, that is better, because things that are imported, we don't know how they produced.
Sylvia says that if farmers work very hard, they will become rich and avoid depending on aid agencies for survival. Yambio businessman Luca Vero Sangara does not like the decision to ban maize importation from Uganda. Speaking in his native Zandi language, Luca says farmers like modern farming technology.
What I'm saying is we are practicing traditional farming, whereby we work with our hands. if the government provides modern farming tools, since there is peace now in the country, the government should provide tractors or money that can help farmers, because without technical support to farmers, if there could be support to local farmers, we could be able to open big farms.
In October, Goodwill State officials in cooperation with the partners USAID, the Netherlands, UK, Switzerland, and various UN agencies launched a recovery and a resilience program in Yambio by donating $9 million to support peace and development activities in the town, which has been hit hard by the 5-year conflict. For VOA News, I am Elias Ginana Mangwando in Yambio.
The people in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo finally voted yesterday, but it was a national election that drew immediate criticism for its lack of organization, allegations of vote rigging, and for equipment that did not work. While both of the presidential frontrunners say they are confident of victory, critics say the long-delayed and messy election was part of the plan all along to keep the ruling coalition firmly in control. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Voters in the Democratic Republic of Congo are angry after a chaotic Sunday poll that saw massive irregularities, including alleged errors in the voter roll, delays at polling stations, delayed polling materials, and technical malfunctions. Observers from the Catholic Church Observation Mission said the poll had been relatively calm as vote counting continued Monday. But the mood in the capital was tense, and local media reported that internet access had been suddenly cut for an untold number of residents. Sunday's vote was originally supposed to happen in 2016, but was postponed numerous times as President Joseph Kabila remained in power past the end of his mandate. The most recent delay came just a week before the poll, when a fire at an election depot destroyed thousands of voting machines. In the rainy capital, Kinshasa, some voters said they waited more than 5 hours Sunday to vote. This young voter, who said his name was Bolungu, said he was disappointed. I came to sanction Mr. Kabila. I want to vote for change. But unfortunately, there is no voting, there's no machines, there's nothing, he says. Some people could not even find their names on the list. In three districts considered opposition strongholds, the government postponed voting yet again, effectively taking 1 million voters out of the presidential election. Nonetheless, opposition presidential candidate Martin Fayulu was predicted to beat Kabila's candidate, Emmanuel Shadary, according to a recent opinion poll. Fayulu said he was confident of victory. Can you, in all good faith, with what you have seen today, someone serious can say that Shadary won the election or the presidential election, he says? If he wants to dream, let him dream. Kabila's critics, among them Fayulu, say the chaos was intentional. Analyst Claude Kabemba, director of the Johannesburg-based Southern Africa Resource Watch, says few analysts think the vote was fair.
Because the way these elections were organized and the way they happened, it seems to me that it was a planned chaos, and that does not augur well for him as he leaves power. And I think he's going to look back and see the mess he has left behind. And I think he will live with that for many, many years to come.
The election drama is likely to continue into January. The same poll that predicted an opposition victory also warned that the majority of Congolese voters would refuse to accept a ruling party win. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Boulevard by Fere Gola. We've been listening to Fere Gola, and I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We appreciate you being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Veve ki amongana
Edanga oza moke
Victorio Mbaya
Mawe salamu Na bolingo ya bomona edi
Papa ne malemba Klanyawo Kin makambo
Edanga oza moke
Talandenga susya tungisin fotope molimo edi
Yves makambo la promesse
Alandenga motemezi kurebya
Anima, Kukaze Kongolo.
Porta motema no ferme, Edina sobeta tok tok, Evaninga banda tongo, Chipoko zofungolate, Qu'est-ce qui se passe mon amour?